Golf Smarter number 95 for October 9, 2007.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Functional Golf with physical therapist Mike Glabman.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week, we tap the minds of PGA and USGA course pros, architects, authors, and teaching gurus to provide you with tips, drills, insights, and advice so that you can lower your scores. Golf Smarter is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome, and thanks for downloading the Golf Smarter podcast. Today, Kenny Nicholson of Edwin Watts Golf will answer questions why Japanese clubs are more expensive, what bulge and roll means on the face of woods, and golf club maintenance and how to keep yours looking good for years to come. Also, we'll announce the winner of our Solus Wedge drawing. Our guest today is Mike Glabman, who has earned a master's in physical therapy and is a certified strength conditioning specialist. The focus of today's conversation is golf injuries and injury prevention. No matter how old you are, if you play golf, this is important information for the future and quality of your game. Welcome, Mike.
Hey, Fred.
How are you?
I am great.
Good to talk to you. As a physical therapist, I have to believe that you see a lot of golfers.
We do. Definitely. A lot of them with different types of injuries.
So there's not a golf injury per se that people come and complain about. Is it more of a lifestyle injury that happens to flare up during golf?
I would say predominantly, yes, that's the case. People come from all different walks of life, and all those different walks walk onto the golf course. And it may just get exacerbated by their swing, because everybody swings differently.
That's very true, and you can see that on the driving range and every round of golf that you play. You're a golfer, right?
I am. I've played since I was 8.
Wow. And so you have seen a lot of strange swings. How did you get to physical therapy from where, you know, as a kid who grew up playing a lot of sports and playing a lot of golf?
Just interest in sports and how the body moves and having injuries myself and seeing my father with lots of injuries. Kind of got pushed in through the medical realm, and out came physical therapy.
What do you find is the most common golf-related injury?
Typically, people come in predominantly with back injuries, and then you can kind of go from there and go outward to knee injuries and elbow injuries and wrist injuries.
Let's start with the back injuries. I got to believe that would be most of it because so much torque going on.
Exactly.
Is it generally centered around a lower back area, or does it cut across the middle of your back or your shoulders? Or
Generally, the low back is the one that gets hammered the most. But we do see the other injuries going up the back, sometimes in the neck. And really, the thoracic spine is the one that gets missed the most. Which seems to be pretty stiff, and if you can look at anyone swinging on the PGA Tour, they have big turns, and their thoracic spine is the one that can turn the most.
I'm sorry, I'm an idiot. Tell me about the thoracic spine.
The thoracic spine is caught in the middle between your neck and your low back, and it's where all of your ribs attach to, and its primary motion there is rotation.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the times through people's lives, wherever they work or play, posture-wise, gravity will eventually win, and we see that part of the spine have an excessive curve through it. It's called kyphosis. And a lot of times when it starts curving more and more there, it starts to decrease its rotational motion. And in the golf swing, we see different things have to compensate in order to complete the golf swing, the backswing in all the way through the follow-through. And if you don't have the rotation in your thoracic spine, the low back will take a lot of that rotation, and the low back is primarily not used to doing that rotation, and then you have injuries.
Are these injuries, and you know, they may not be injuries. I know that if when I play golf, I've been working through some back pain for a number of years, but I don't consider it an injury. I consider it chronic back pain.
Right.
But I know that if I play on the weekend and I'm a little bit stiff and I get up and I stretch each morning and stuff, that it's kind of dissipated over the next few days, or even if I go back out on the golf course and I swing easy, it's going to dissipate as well. Are these golf caused? I mean, people say when I say I play golf, they say, well, of course you have back pain. I mean, are these injuries caused by playing golf, or is it just a lifestyle thing?
Probably a little of both. You have to kind of look at yourself as being a body that changes every single day based on what you're going to put it through. The most obvious is physically we look different than we were when we were younger.
Oh, not me.
Of course not. Of course not. So you have to look at going out in a round of golf if you're not properly warmed up or ready to play, and you have other compensations, whether it be an ankle injury or tight hips or, again, your thoracic spine being tight, that your back is going to have to be doing overload work that it used to be doing if you were just to be walking around at the mall. So, yes, golf can be a cause of an injury, but more than likely it's from something else while you're playing golf.
Hmm. So what should I be looking at on making changes or exercise? What would you suggest?
Well, ideally, I would suggest if you're having pain every time you're playing golf is to try to get in to see someone who has a good sound anatomy background and knows a little bit about biomechanics, actually a lot about biomechanics, to where they can find the root of your problems. So when you go out and play around, it's not your low back that's getting hit all the time.
Let's talk about biomechanics for a minute. You specialize in this, or you have a deep understanding of this?
Yes, I do. That's primarily my practice here in California. Is every person that comes through is different, and no, it's not a cookie-cutter business where we can give the same exercise to every person. You have to look at where people come from in their lives and how they're moving. So we watch people walk, we watch people do squats, we watch people do lunges, we watch people reach over their head from left to right, rotation left, and see what kind of restrictions people have in their body.
And that's what you're looking for, are restrictions.
Exactly.
And then once you assess they have those type of restrictions, what do you do?
We find the extent of their restriction and we'd use manual techniques to help loosen up those, and we give specific exercises encompassing the three-dimensional planes that we live our life in to move through and really get those restrictions freed up. A good example in the golf swing is maybe if you're a right-handed golfer, you can look at a left ankle. And I'm sure if anyone has been active in their life, they've sprained an ankle before. And you can sometimes lose mobility there. And if you're standing in your stance, your left ankle has to go through quite a bit of falling in, so to speak. We call it pronation, and which helps the knee drive in towards your ball. And if you're restricted in that area, your left hip is not going to get your turn, and your back is going to get overworked, and you have to make more of a turn with your thoracic spine.
Do these type of injuries discriminate between men and women?
Nope, not at all.
Yeah. And do you generally see people who, all age ranges, or are we looking at people who are, everything starting where, as you mentioned earlier, gravity is taking over.
Right.
And you know what they say about gravity? It's not just a good idea. It's the law.
It is. It definitely is the law. And it definitely pushes us all the way down to the ground.
Yeah. Yeah, it keeps us there.
As far as that question goes, we see everybody from kids all the way up to senior citizens, primarily restrictions as we get older. You know, as you're a kid, you could go out and do anything you wanted and you weren't sore afterwards. They definitely have more mobilities. It's the problem when the kids come in that have injuries, say they tore a ligament in their knee playing football or a lot of sprained ankles. They may not see immediate restrictions, but as they get older, the typical answer that I get from people is, well, I sprained my ankle or I broke my ankle when I was 12, and now I have back pain when I'm 36 or 46, or you can keep on going and the injuries pile up.
And you see a direct correlation between that ankle injury.
Exactly.
As a kid and back pain as an adult.
Right. Mm-hmm. And if you have a good understanding of biomechanics, you can really understand how someone could have a right shoulder pain or even low back pain from a left ankle injury that has restrictions in it.
Mike, I like you a lot, but what can I do to avoid coming to visit you? How about some tips and drills here?
Tips and drills. Really, you just want to, it's kind of move it or lose it, is the old saying. but also you have to kind of move it in the right direction. Without getting too complicated, everyone understands when I say to them, we live our lives in a three-dimensional world. And a good example of that is when you see people walking, they're moving forward. But what you really don't see is that they're actually what their bodies are doing to move them forward. Their bodies are moving left to right, and they're rotating left to right around axis. And we see tremendous amount of restrictions in all those different axes. And it's hard to really go into exact things, tips and things like that, without seeing everybody, because everyone is different.
Well, I'd like to be proactive here. I'd like something that could help me, like I said, improve things in my life, in my body, so that I can avoid going to see a physical therapist.
Right. Well,
help me, buddy.
I'm trying to help you. I actually like some of the answers that Dr. Divitt had given you on a previous podcast. He gives some great guidelines as far as cardiovascular exercise, flexibility, and strength. And I kind of look at that in my practice as a triangle, and cardiovascular exercise is among the base of that. Without your cardiovascular fitness, you can't get blood to the proper areas of your body. Flexibility would be on the other side and strength on the other. And we can combine all of those actually in exercises that we do every day. Lunges are probably one of the most basic exercises that we do here. And that's an easy one to do in three-dimensional plane.
All right, you're going to walk me through one. Let's do it so we learn how to do it properly. I'm standing up. Teach me to do a lunge properly.
Okay. A lunge, by definition, is taking a step to any angle or depth or translation, and then coming back to your same position that you started in. So if you were to take a forward lunge with your right foot, you would take one step forward and then come right back into your same spot.
Is that like a quick motion, like one, two? Or do I have to hold it when I get down to there?
You could do any speed you're comfortable with, but typically you'd take your step. As soon as all your weight went onto that front foot, you'd push right back and come to standing.
So, and then get your weight over your front foot like that?
Right.
And then come back up to standing?
Exactly.
And this is a something I should be doing every morning, or is this something I should do when I'm warming up for my next round of golf?
You could do it every day, and you can do it warming up. Going back to the lunges, and then we'll get into the warming up for golf, because that's something totally different.
Oh, good.
Going back to the lunges, to be three-dimensional with it, you would take a forward lunge going forward.
Yep.
You would, if you're going with your right foot, you would take a lunge going straight out to the right.
Straight out, you mean sideways?
Sideways, yes. We call that a lateral lunge or a sideways lunge.
Okay.
And then you could take a lunge with your right foot. If you were going to take a lunge backwards, not straight backwards 180 degrees, but not 90 degrees, but in between is 135 degrees.
Right.
My math is a little off sometimes. so you would actually turn like you're taking a step going backwards.
And so, but my left foot stays planted, and I'm going off to a 135-degree angle.
Exactly.
And get my weight back there, and then back up.
Exactly.
Okay. And this helps the back area?
It will, definitely.
Oh, I love these. And I've only been doing my right foot. I can't wait to get started on my left.
Perfect. So that's a basic, we call that a three-dimensional lunge, where you're incorporating all the different planes of motion.
Forward, and just, side, and then not straight back, but off to the
right,
an angled back.
Right. And we actually call those planes sagittal plane, which would be forward, frontal plane, which is out to the side, and a transverse plane, where you're rotating around your body. And typically, I like to send people where they're now reaching with their hands in different planes of motion.
Okay.
So if you were to take just a forward reach, and you could just reach out as far forward as you could, and you incorporated that forward reach with each one of those lunges.
Oh, wow.
So you could take your right foot and you did a lunge forward and reach as far forward as you could and then come right back up to standing.
But now I'm not bending at my hips, my waist. I'm keeping my back straight.
You can as far forward as you can reach. And if that tells you you have to bend your hips, then you have to bend your hips.
Oh, really? Just reach out, really, and bending over.
Exactly.
Am I trying to reach to the floor or straight ahead?
Straight ahead to the wall right in front of you.
Okay, got it. Trying to make, you know, this is audio, so we really have to be as descriptive as possible so people
right.
understand what we're doing. And I have this phenomenal image of people on a train right now doing this. And
right.
So don't be embarrassed.
Well,
if someone likes to tell them, I'm listening to the Golf Smarter podcast, and I need to do this right now.
Right, right. Okay. If you want to incorporate a little bit of balance with that, I'd be perfect to do it on a train. So, and then you can take your lunge out to the side, which would be your frontal lunge, and then do the same thing and reach towards the same wall.
Oh, no, wait a minute, wait. So I'm lunging to the right, but I'm pushing forward with my hands.
Exactly.
Oh, and I feel the stretch of my left leg now.
Oh, good.
Oh, good. I love that.
Now take that 135-degree lunge and reach straight out right in front of your toe. If it's pointing that way, you're reaching straight forward again.
Good. Okay.
And coming right back.
Oh, these are excellent.
You could do that on the left side.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's just you're doing a three-dimensional lunge with your legs, but you've only incorporated one plane with your hands.
Mm-hmm.
So you can reach now with your hands. You can do a rotational reach. So let's do the typical one for walking would be if you were to take that right anterior lunge. And now take both of your hands and rotate and reach all the way to the right as far as you can go.
Okay, wait, where's my foot going?
Your foot is going straight forward.
Yeah.
And then both of your hands are reaching to the right as far as you can,
and
sort
I'm,
of twisting around.
So I am twisting.
Yeah.
Okay, so if I'm losing my breath while I'm doing this. Okay, good.
That's the cardiovascular portion of that.
Oh, okay.
And then same thing, you take your right foot and you're going out to the side this time to the right.
Yeah.
And take both hands and rotate as far as you can to the right.
Mm-hmm.
And take that 135-degree step backwards and rotate to the right.
Okay.
And hey, that one kind of looks like a golf swing a little bit.
Oh, look at that. Well, not with my leg way back there, but yeah.
It's the same motion that you would go through playing golf.
Okay.
Which leads me into the aspect of warming up for golf and looking at it biomechanically, walking, which we do all day long, is something completely different that your body does than actually playing golf.
Can I sit down now?
You can definitely sit down.
I'm hot. I'm exhausted from that. Okay.
Good. So let's look at walking. If you could watch anybody walking while you're waiting in the airport or just seeing anybody, you can see that their left foot comes forward as their right hand comes forward.
Yep.
And looking at it even closely, that their shoulders and their hips are now twisting on each other. So they're going the opposite direction of each other as they're walking.
Sure.
That's pretty easy to see. If you look at a golf swing, as you're setting up in your stance, taking your backswing, your hips and your shoulders are now going the same direction.
Oh, so that's an unnatural motion, huh?
It's an unnatural motion, yes. That's what makes golf even that much more difficult.
Huh.
So when you're warming up for golf, it's imperative in my eyes that you would warm up the way you would play golf, not the way you would walk around. And it makes it even harder to walk straight from your car to the first tee to be able to hit that first shot.
Huh.
So going with your lunges, if you were to do a quick little warm-up with your lunges, every time you have to keep in your head that your hips and your shoulders are now going the same direction. So if you were to take that right foot forward lunge...
Wait a minute, I'm getting back up.
Okay, get back up.
Okay, good. All right.
If you were to take that right foot forward lunge,
mm-hmm.
you want to take both of your hands mm-hmm. and rotate to the left. So you're reaching all the way to the left.
And now am I trying to reach to the left or behind me?
You're trying to reach to the left as far as you would go. Think of taking your follow-through and reaching all the way through a follow-through.
Right.
And then you can alternate and use your left foot and reach all the way to the right.
Mm-hmm.
That's your forward lunge. And then you can take your side lunge. And if you're coming to the right, Now you're opening your hips to the right and rotating to the right, and then go back to the left and rotate to the left.
Great.
And then you can take that posterior lunge, which is the 135 degree, rotate that same direction so your shoulders and hips are going the same direction, and then back to the left, and you're left to left.
Mm-hmm.
And if you continue to kind of repeat that, say, five times in a row going right to left, it kind of looks like you're playing golf a little bit.
Yeah, and your blood's going to start pumping. You're going to get warmed up, huh?
Of course.
Awesome.
Just like Dr. Divitt said, do some jumping jacks.
Yeah.
But I think doing lunges actually gets your whole body going. You have to have your foot planted in the right direction and be stable on it. And you're also loosening up those hips the proper way, and your shoulders and hips are going the same direction. You can even use a golf club if you'd like to go through it.
Yeah. And so when you're going forward with your hands, should you be holding a golf club? Is that a good idea so people aren't looking like you like you're an idiot? I mean, it's like, see, I'm doing this for golf.
Yeah, yeah, sure, sure. You can hold your golf club. In fact, if you just, you know, if you're going to grab your golf club and lift it up over your head and stretch your arms out, you can just hold it just like that.
Okay. Very good.
But go through your lunges. And that warms up the hips and the shoulders and the thoracic spine, as you might feel maybe some crunching here and there, some people.
Now, I have to believe that you're also an advocate of walking on a golf course?
Well?
Or is that really creating, wreaking more havoc on your body if you're not a walker on a regular basis?
It's been pondered, going through my head a lot about that, and I know a lot of courses out there are now demanding that you use carts, which I think is easier for the golf swing. It also tells me that these professional golfers are a lot better than we think they are because they're walking the course.
Yeah.
And their bodies are getting different information from when they swing to when they now have to walk, which is amazing. They're finely tuned athletes.
Do you think, talking about the finely tuned athletes, watching Tiger Woods play golf, he swings awfully hard.
Yes, he does.
Is he going to end his career early by swinging that hard?
I don't think so. He trains really well. He does flexibility training as well. I don't know this personally, but I'm assuming this from what he says in his interviews and his fitness. But his body is prepared to do that. He loads his body very well, and he explodes very well. As we can see where his ball ends up.
Yeah. Hey, can you see that far?
Not as we get older.
Yeah, exactly. I recently received an email from a listener. Tim Cook in Randolph, New Jersey, says that my father is disabled from Vietnam and loves to play, but we do ride in a golf cart when playing. I find myself almost rushing to my shot, then zooming away to my next shot. Do you think there's a major difference emotionally when golfing in a cart versus walking?
Definitely, for sure. When you're walking, you get the true aspect of what your next shot is going to be. You hear a lot of golfers out there, I just play one shot at a time. Well, they're also thinking of that one shot after they hit their last one and walking up to the next one.
Right.
Whereas we're thinking about not running off the cart path down into the ravine.
Interesting. Now, let's get back to walking versus riding. Are golf shoes designed well for walking, do you think? Are they just cool looking or, you know, like neat laces or things like that? I mean, I personally don't wear normal Nike tennis shoes or Adidas or Reebok or anything. I wear shoes called MBT. I don't know if you're familiar with the MBT.
I'm not.
Maasai Barefoot Technology, and they're like the rocker type.
Okay.
They're tallest at the center point, so the walking motion. I'll tell you, it's really helped my back pain. They're expensive shoes, but I wear them all the time, and I really, really love the way I feel. What it's done for my posture and stuff, and I really wish there was a golf shoe that worked like this as well. And I'm just, you know, I have to put inserts in my golf shoes. And I'm just wondering your thoughts about golf shoes and posture and your physical condition.
Right. Golf shoes in general, there's a lot to choose from out there. And again, everyone is different, so it's good that there's lots of choices out there. It's hard to say, yes, this is the best golf shoe or this is not. I've worn some golf shoes that have been terrible on my feet. And you have to look at kind of everybody differently and also look at the biomechanics of what the foot has to do.
Hmm.
And being a biomechanist and looking at what the foot does when it hits the ground when you're walking, certain things have to happen up the chain so your body can work accordingly to be able to walk forward. Most importantly, the foot has to pronate, and then it has to resupinate. And those words are kind of hard to understand, but when your foot hits the ground, you can kind of see that your foot falls towards the inside. And a lot of people overpronate. If you're a runner, you know that word, and people build up arch supports to stop that. Unfortunately, sometimes those arch supports are too good at what they do, and they don't even allow a little bit of pronation. And that's when we see a lot of those ankle restrictions. And up the chain, you start getting less hip motion. And then that starts cutting down and making some weakness in the hip, and the rest of your body has to work harder to walk forward. So really, to say what's the best golf shoe for somebody, you kind of have to understand what type of foot you have to have.
Hmm.
You have to know if you're an over-pronator, an under-pronator, or if you're just a neutral person, and kind of go from there. And if you've had any injuries in the past. So as far as golf shoes, that doesn't give you the best answer, but it's hard to give you an answer because everyone's foot is different out there.
Interesting. Well, I found this absolutely fascinating, and I appreciate your time. I think that people have a lot to learn about getting themselves in proper condition, and even if you are, expect to see a physical therapist, I guess, at some point, huh?
Definitely. You know, physical therapists, we have an extensive understanding of anatomy and biomechanics. And if you really, truly want to get better, instead of masking symptoms with basic exercises, you really have to find the root of your problems.
Right, right. Explain to me functional golf. You had mentioned it before we started recording, and I wanted to...
Functional golf is kind of, it's not really anything specific. It's kind of looking at function as it applies to your body.
I see.
We live our lives in gravity, and gravity gives us a lot of motion for free. And saying that, we don't have to use our muscles to do certain things. A good example of that is our abdominal muscles. People like to do crunches, and there's all sorts of exercise equipment and gimmicks out there to make the stomach crunch and the chest come towards the hips. And really, if you're standing up, and if you bent forward with your head going towards the ground, you really realize that your abs don't even do that motion. And so you have to understand that in function, you have to live your life against gravity and with gravity. So it can help you, and it can also hurt you.
Hmm.
So we look at things functionally, how your body moves, doing what you're doing, instead of looking at a cookie cutter and saying in order to strengthen your abs, you have to do sit-ups or do crunches or grab a $19.99 item off the infomercial to sit in your chair and bring your shoulders towards your hips.
Right.
That's where I'm going with that.
Mm-hmm.
Functionally, your body works with gravity and against gravity. So a good way to turn your abs on, if you're looking at function, is easily you can do a lunge, going back to the lunges. If you did your forward lunge, now take your hands and reach over the back of your head. And you can see easily that your abs will turn on, bringing them back to the center position.
Sure.
In golf, your abs are the ones that fire up in your backswing when you get to that point of transformation at the end of the golf swing and start towards your downswing.
So strong core is really important.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Having a lot of hip mobility is really important to how your back works.
Mm-hmm.
Having your ankle mobility is really important to how your body works and the golf swing.
I would think that it's pretty obvious that your hip mobility would help your golf swing, but I never thought of your ankles being so important in all this.
Yeah. I was actually watching the PGA a couple weeks back, and they did one of their slow motion golf swing analysis. And I forget who they were talking about, but they were really emphasizing how well this golfer had their right heel on the ground and didn't really pick it up until way late in his follow-through. And I was looking at that going, wow, that guy has really good ankle mobility. And if you can, I look at things a little differently.
Yeah, you're sick, dude.
I am. You have to really understand, as a biomechanist, you really have to make yourself that L5 lumbar vertebrae sometimes and find out, hey, what's causing me to be upset here?
And everyone else looking at the ball fly away, and you're staring at the guy's ankles.
I am. And they also showed us somebody else, and they were talking about something completely different about his golf swing. However, I was still looking at his right ankle. And notice on this golfer how early his ankle came up in his swing.
Huh.
And so in my eyes, I'm looking, hey, that guy doesn't have as much ankle mobility as the other guy. I wonder what kind of injuries he has versus the other guy.
Very interesting. Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
Exactly.
Cool. Mike Labman of the Center of Rehab Excellence, right?
Yes.
And that you can see, find out more about them at centerofrehabexcellence.com, or I guess not core.com, but Center of Rehab Excellence is core, and yes, that's what we're trying to strengthen here. Thank you very much for joining us, and yeah, we can reveal that we're related, you know?
We are.
I couldn't even explain it. Second cousins, first cousins, second removed, second cousins, first. I'm not sure, but all I know is my mom and your dad are cousins, and so we've known each other all our lives, right?
Right.
Except I'm more of the generation of your dad, and it doesn't matter. So, Elliot, thanks for the introduction. All right, Mike, thanks a lot, buddy.
Thank you, Fred.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, golfers of all skill levels, it's time to Ask Kenny. Do you have a question about specific golf gear or are baffled about what to look for in a category of golf products? Kenny Nicholson, our technical specialist from Edwin Watts Golf, would like to help. If we use your question on the show, you'll receive a free Golf Smarter Edwin Watts Golf hat. To submit your question, please go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the button labeled Ask Kenny. Ask Kenny is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf and edwinwattsgolf.com, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Hey, Kenny, got a letter from a 16-year-old I got to share with you.
Let me have it.
Okay. He says, hi, my name is William. I'm 16 and I live in Long Island, New York, and I just started playing golf about 3 months ago, and I love it. I play for the school team on 9-hole courses. I was looking around iTunes, found your podcast, and let me say that this is the only golf podcast I can listen to without falling asleep.
I'm digging it so far.
So far, it's good. So he says, "This I love this. I went to play at Port Jefferson, some fancy rich place, for a school competition. On the 6th hole, we see this orange cat out on the fairway. Okay, no big deal. So we try to scare it away because we're 16 and we're dumb. And so we start yelling at it while its back is turned to us. Nothing happened. We ran up to it and tried to scare it. And when it saw us, it ran away. So we had a good laugh and continued playing. Well, we get back to the clubhouse to find a poster on the wall that reads, Lost Kitten. Orange and near deaf. Reward, $1,000.
Oh, my.
And he splits, I hate golf.
Well, I want to know how many kids went back out there looking for it.
Yeah, exactly. I love it. He writes, I hate golf.
Hey, I would have been one of the first out there.
Well, Will, we're sorry, and you don't even get a hat. No, we'll send you a hat, actually.
I was about to say, come on,
yeah.
I'll pay for the hat.
Yeah,
let's
okay.
Will,
we're going to get back to you on this one. I need to get your address. But, yeah, you can have a hat. And maybe we'll make it orange for you so you have the great story to go with.
And we'll spray paint it.
Yeah. All right, well, we got some questions here that we have to take care of before we give away the Solus Wedge. And the first one comes from Rod McDonald, who is in Scotland, and I'm not even going to attempt to say Arbroath, Tayside, Scotland. And he says, hey, Kenny, we hear so much about clubs getting fitted, and I indeed have done this. But why do we not get this done for woods and drivers, too? Or does the budge and roll on the face mean that this is less important?
Now, bulge and roll, which is a word that you don't, two words you don't hear as much about with metal woods. You heard a lot about it with the wood-headed golf clubs. You had built-in bulge, which is what that is. It's a curvature of the face from the heel to the toe. So if you're looking at the club face from heel to toe, you'll notice that it has bulge in there. And what it is, it's a built-in correction or compensation for off-center hits. If you hit the ball out towards the toe of the golf club, typically what happens is the ball's going to start out further right. Well, having bulge creates spin to bring the club back to center, and vice versa for heel shots. The club might start out a little further left, but it's creating a spin to help bring the ball back towards the center of the fairway. You have to have built-in bulge on golf clubs, as well as roll is basically roll of the golf face from top to bottom. And what that does, if you didn't have roll on a club face, it would probably appear as though the loft of the golf club is a lot less loft than it really is. It would show the true loft of the golf club. And roll, basically, if you hit the ball towards the top of the club face, the ball is going to go higher. And if you hit it lower on the club face, the ball is going to go lower. But it's going to help create a spin that's going to help bring that down some. Like if you hit the ball real low, a lot of times what you'll notice is the ball will start out low and then start climbing. And that's because of roll. It creates a spin to help get the ball airborne. Two very important factors of the golf club. Now, that being said, you do not have bulge and roll on irons, only on woods. So good question.
All right, and good answer.
Oh, yeah, hopefully. Without looking at a golf club, it's really hard to sit here and try to analyze it and tell you exactly what it is. But if you look at a golf club, you'll easily be able to tell, looking from heel to toe, that there is bulge on the golf club, as well as roll is not something that you see so much of on woods with metal woods. It used to be very prevalent with wooden headed golf clubs.
Oh, all righty. All right. I want to move on. I could comment for this, but I'm not going to because Mike.
It helps you, Fred. It helps you.
Good. Well, there's your answer. I hope that helps. Mike Stenison from Wilmar, Minnesota, says that they just purchased a new set of Ladies Ignite irons with hybrids, a Nikent 3DX square driver, and a 3DX fairway wood that his wife, 12-year-old daughter, and 9-year-old son are all going to use. And he wants to be able to keep, and of course teach his children to keep his possessions in good shape. So they want to make them look great for years of enjoyment and want to know about the cleaning of the clubs after each use. Is there a better way than another to keep them looking new? Is it okay to soak them in soap and water for a minute or two and then dry them? Or just use a damp cloth to get the grass stains and the dirt off like they do when you finish a round and the kids are trying to get $5 out of you?
Yeah, I mean,
editorial comment, by the way. Mike didn't say that. That was
me. And take care of those guys.
Yeah, exactly.
The big factor there is how big is the cavity on the back of the golf club. If it has what we call an undercut cavity, it might be hard to get just a damp cloth in there, so you might want to soak it. The most important thing that you want to do, though, is make sure that you dry the golf clubs because they can rust. They are metal. So the most important factor there is to make sure that you dry them off after you soak them or use a damp cloth on them. And then put them in your trunk or in the garage, wherever you keep them. And then also another part to that is grips. If you're out playing and it's rained or the grips have gotten wet, don't just leave them in the bag. Make sure you get them out and try to towel dry them off and let them sit outside of the bag. That'll help them last longer as well.
Very good. Here's a question. We're doing international on this show. This one comes from Paul Landico, who's writing to us from Tokyo, Japan. He says, if you're ever coming to through Tokyo, please let him know. And Kenny, are we going to Tokyo soon?
Whew, man, I haven't made that plan yet.
No, but I'd love to. I want to go back to
Asia.
Yeah, and we have someone to play with when we go. Paul's there. He's inviting us. Anyways, he's been re-listening to the podcast and still enjoying them as much as the first time. Oh, especially
Thank
the conversations
you.
With Kenny.
Ooh.
Oh, this guy needs a hat. But he wants to know, speaking of the Japanese brand clubs like Mizuno, Strix, and Bridgestone, why are they so expensive even in Japan? They're actually more expensive to buy than imported brands from the U.S.
labor cost.
Okay.
A lot of the other manufacturers have their clubs built in China and then they're assembled over here. There are certain manufacturers that have their clubs designed and built in Japan, and labor cost is the driving factor there. I mean, golf in Japan is very expensive, and there, you know, whether a lot of people know this or not, there are different products that are used over there. In Japan that are not allowed by the USGA in the United States.
Like what?
Just because a coefficient of restitution spring-like effect is a little bit higher over there than it is here. So they make a golf club that has a higher core value that can be used over there. And they have different, some of them are different colors and have different writing on them, obviously.
Well, that makes
sense. And
there's
other brands that are very popular over there that are not as popular over here. You know, Hanma is one of those brands that is very popular in Japan, not so much in the U.S. It is a very, very pricey golf club. I mean, you have a set of irons that cost anywhere from $1,000 to $15,000 for a set of golf clubs. So
I remember when I went to the PGA Expo in Vegas, and I got to swing some Hanma. It's Hanma, H-A-N-M-A.
H-O-N-M-A, Hanma.
H-O-N-M-A. I got to swing a couple of those clubs, and it was amazing. But when I found out the price, I couldn't believe it.
Oh, it's staggering how much you pay for a set. I mean, they use diamond-encrusted cavities in the back. You can get different star values. There's a lot of status quo in Japan.
Sure.
They make a great product, but it is very pricey.
So it's kind of like, I don't want to compare it exactly to ping, but there's status involved with owning a set of ping clubs, and there's a lot of status involved.
Yeah, brand equity.
Yeah.
You know, you can't get them everywhere. We talked about that earlier, and you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, some stuff that's hard to find is going to hold a value more, and that's one of those that is hard to find.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Randy Shields from Castle Rock, Washington, had a couple quick questions for you, wanting to know that since you've been to Beaverton and visited the Nike campus, what's the chances of opening an Edward Watts store up in Vancouver, Washington now? Huh?
we get those questions a lot. Hey, come to this state, come here, come there. The thing that we look at from a moving standpoint or moving into a different location is when we go into an area, is it cost effective to get one retail store? A lot of people shop online and through the catalog because they don't pay taxes when they do that. So once we put one store in your state, the whole state pays tax. So we look at it from that standpoint, and we look at it from a weather standpoint as well. You know, is there an off season? In a lot of states there is. You know, a lot of states are fixing to go through that off season now and won't be playing golf again until March or April. You know, there's a lot of variables that we take into consideration. We are expanding. There are some locations that we're looking at, some states that we're not in right now that we are looking at moving into. So,
you know, we really don't talk about this very much, which is maybe a disservice to you guys, but not necessarily to the audience. But I think people would be curious. There are Edwin Watts Golf stores, but they're primarily in the southeast of the United States, correct?
That is correct.
And how many stores?
62 retail stores.
Wow.
You know,
wow.
And they are mainly in the southeast. There are a couple of franchise stores up in the Boston area.
Okay.
And those are some of the only that were ever franchised out. Edwin decided years ago that he wasn't going to go that route. If his name was going to be on it, he was going to be behind it. So, you know, the ones that we have are 62, and they're mainly in the southeast.
So primarily you guys are catalog and online business. But don't people want to put something in their hand? I guess that's the point, is they can go to their local shop, something, get something in their hand, feel the best thing, and then go online or call you guys through catalog, get the best price and get exactly what they need and great service.
We get that a lot, where somebody might get fitted or go to a shop and find something. The one thing that we offer that a lot of other people don't is a 2-year manufacturer's warranty, where a lot of people are just one. So we extend that for you as well. And if you ever have an issue, you can count on it getting resolved in a timely fashion. To be in the business since 1968, there's something to be said for that.
Yeah. Yeah, you're doing something right, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a very competitive business, and price is not always the determining factor. You know, a lot of times it's customer service. If there is an issue and the price is just a few dollars more, what are you going to do? Are you going to take the easy route out and save a couple of dollars? In the long run, that might hurt you. So,
Well, the second part of Randy's question was, could you rig one of Fred's drawings for me?
Hey, at least he's honest.
Exactly. Other people have been whining about, he keeps picking from the front or he keeps picking from the back. Or,
I've tried it all.
You really have. We've done a lot of these things. And, you know, if you want to see if you've won, you can always check online and see who's won and what they've won by going to golfsmarterpodcast.com. Click on the contest button that you always click on when you enter our drawings. But you'll see the long list of products we've given away and who has won and where they're from. And you can see we're all over the map on both of those things, on location and
all
on names.
All over the world. Really?
All over the world. It's a very cool thing. So we are giving away a Solus Wedge today, and we have sorted, alphabetized, and omitted redundancies. And even with that, I have printed out the – how many pages? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And I printed out the 6 pages that includes – 255 names, and again, we got rid of redundancies, meaning Derek, you know, we talked about this last time. Derek entered 12 times this time.
That was all by accident.
No, yeah, I'm sure.
Derek would not do that again after you called him out.
No, well, he did. Derek, knock it off. But 255 entries, and I've sorted them, again, alphabetically by first name. And your number that you're going to pick is what?
They always say I go low, I go high. If I go right in the middle, it's 127 and a half. So now the guy at 127 and the guy at 128, one of them's going to be lucky. And I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to flip a coin.
Well, wait a minute, Kenny. Give away one to each of them.
I wish I could.
I'm trying,
folks. I'm going to flip the coin heads for 127 and tails for 128. And 128 is your winner.
And 128.
The guy at 127 is going to be mad.
Yeah, but he'll never know who it is. And no, he won't know. And you know what? We have this is from North Carolina. The city
we are in that state.
Oh, good. And so he can get himself fitted in exactly which Solus Wedge he wants. This is from Garner, North Carolina. Do you know where Garner is?
I do not.
I do not either. And this person's name is Kevin. And I only do the slow drum roll on that because we had 6 different Kevins. But this Kevin is Kevin Alexander. Congratulations.
Congratulations, Kevin.
Yeah, you just won a Solus Wedge. And you can go check one out at an Edwin Watts Golf Store near you and then give Kenny a call and he'll have it sent out to you. Very good. But we're not done, Kenny. I'm never done by giving something away because I want to give something else away. And what would you like to spend the next 2 weeks talking about that we're going to give away?
I had a buddy of mine in here the other day, and we've done a show with him on the Golf Better, Mr. Frank Thomas, and I asked him about this, and he would love to be able to give away one of his Frankly Frog putters.
Wow. Oh, that's
and
a great
just
deal.
Just real quick, the guy, they have patented the color pink on putters. So if you're out there
really?
Looking for a pink putter, this is the only one you're going to find.
Well, you know, that'll start conversation on the fairway.
Yes, it will.
And the greens. But I'll tell you, after we did the conversation, and if you'd like to know more about the Frankly Frog putters, listen to the Golf Better podcast at Edwin Watts Golf. And we had Kenny and I had a great conversation. We made it a 2-part conversation with Frank Thomas and Scotty Cameron. And if you ever had any questions about putter design, putter technology, you should listen to this show because it's highly informative. Absolutely. And I've been putting with a Frankly Frog putter since then. They were so generous to send me one. And I'll tell you, I had a real nice putter before that, a 2-ball, and I've put it away because I love my Frankly Frog putter. So whoever enters this contest, whoever wins the contest after they've entered, will be a very, very proud owner of a Frankly Frog putter. Now, to enter, please go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the word contest just below the Edwin Watts Golf banner. Once you're there, fill out the shipping information and the verification code and click submit. And remember, you only need to enter once per email address. If you want to send me a note, that's fine. We do respond to those notes. We are reviewing them now, and I am able to get back to people unless you'd like to write me directly, fred@golfsmarterpodcast.com. And please remember that as a Golf Smarter listener, you receive 10% off of any purchase, and you get free shipping with your order. Of course, there are some restrictions that apply, but you can get all that information by clicking the Edwin Watts Golf banner at golfsmarterpodcast.com. You'll get a full explanation of exactly what kind of discounts you get and how to apply your discount and your free shipping. Isn't that right, Kenny?
That was a wonderful job.
That was impressive.
That was.
I'm exhausted. I'm going to go take a nap.
You better walk the dog before your wife gets mad at you.
Yeah, you're right. All right, well, then I'm out of here, Kenny. I'll talk to you next week.
All right, take care, Fred.
And thanks again to Mike Gladman, who joined us today from the Center of Rehab Excellence. I want to put in a little plug for the Radio Baseball Cards podcast one more time as we come to the end of the baseball season. The playoffs are well underway, but the final few shows that we're going to do this year of Radio Baseball Cards are all great Hall of Famers telling World Series stories, including last week's, which I just loved, was a member of the 1932 Cubs who played against the Yankees when Babe Ruth pointed to center field to call his final World Series home run. So we'll play a little promo for Radio Baseball Cards after this. But again, please check it out at smarterpodcasts.com and check out the other shows that we present there. And hopefully soon we'll have some more golf podcasts for you. I'll tease you with that and let that go for now. We close this week's show with a quote submitted by Brad Dole of Calgary, Alberta, Canada, and he quotes Bruce Lansky, who is quite a prolific supplier of great golf quotes. Bruce once bragged, "I'll always remember the day I broke 90. I had a few beers in the clubhouse and was so excited, I forgot to play the back nine." If you have any quotes, questions, comments, or requests, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarterpodcast.com.
Here's another Radio Baseball Card.
If you ask me who the greatest baseball player in history of baseball was, I'd say Babe Ruth. I feel like I've been cheated as a baseball player not being able to see Babe Ruth play the game of baseball. I would have loved to play against Babe Ruth, but if I did, I'd probably be dead now, so maybe I shouldn't say that.
That was Pete Rose, the all-time hit leader in Major League Baseball history, and this is your invitation to subscribe to Radio Baseball Cards, hosted by the late Hall of Famer and network announcer Don Drysdale. Radio Baseball Cards is a series of amazing and sometimes amusing stories recorded in 1987 featuring some of the greatest players of the 20th century. Here's rookie Barry Bonds.
Sometimes I'm a boxer out on the baseball field, you know, and sometimes Eddie Murphy, or some days I'm a Clint Eastwood, you know, just really mad.
My first World Series, I was just a young kid in Chicago, and we played probably the greatest team of all time, the 1932 Yankees.
Also, this being the 60th anniversary of the breaking down of baseball's color barrier, we speak to teammates, opponents, and admirers sharing their favorite memories and celebration of Jackie Robinson. Hall of Fame catcher, the late Roy Campanella.
I can't speak for Jackie, but God knows I know he felt this way. It was a challenge to prove that blacks could play on the field and be gentlemen off of the field.
Collect a piece of baseball history that sounds as fresh today as it did 20 years ago. Subscribe to the premium edition podcast of Radio Baseball Cards at iTunes or at smarterpodcasts.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.